pulse working yet? Feel that.
Does everybody have the right microphone?
I think we should trade one more time just to be sure.
Switch microphones.
Ready, set, go. Where Big Dave at? Navarro Bowman, that's the one, other one I was thinking about. Willis Bowman.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Paris Harrelson.
Who?
Ahmad Brooks.
What's going on, everybody? It's the Fansmanship.com
Alden
podcast.
Smith. 49er linebackers.
Back in full effect. With Andy Stevens, I'm Owen Main, and we have a guest speaker today, Jesse Pereira. What's going on, Jesse?
Hi.
That's going to be about as much as we're going to get from Jesse, I'm afraid. Got a good show today.
Not in the slightest.
No, we'll get a lot of takes from Jesse. Jesse's got opinions, if nothing else.
Well, doesn't everybody have an opinion on the Dodgers? I mean, come on.
Lots hopefully. Of opinions.
So today we had a lot of things we're going to talk about. The first and foremost, we have the Dodgers on the slate. Of course,
it's
this
a hot
morning,
topic.
Of course,
to be honest with you.
Of course, last night and this morning, the Dodgers and actually Bill Shakin and the LA Times reported that the Dodgers
and Plaschke
sold, and Plaschke, of course, Plaschke.
He got a little bit of that, but there was enough of a meat on that bone for everybody to get a bite. You know, it's been going on for so long. Everybody's wanted a piece of him, and finally the day came. So rejoice, Dodger Nation.
Exactly. And Andy, you're right. We do have some
hot topic.
Okay, great. So other than
it's after, it should have been.
I know, right? That's how we do it at fansmanship.com
right,
podcast.
Right. We don't have a board yet. We're just using an iPod. So get off our backs.
Get off me. I got a T for saying that one time. We got the Yayers.
Did you do the dolphin as well? After
and whip the noodle? Yes. Yes. And absolutely.
Anyway.
We have the Dodgers coming up today. Of course, the Dodgers. That's going to be the big topic. Who do they go to? Who buys them? How happy are we that they're sold or that they're going to be sold and that's a done deal at this point? We're going to talk NFL picks. We've been doing a pretty good job of keeping track, at least, of our NFL picks. And so off we go making our, what is this, week nine now?
Week nine.
Dang, week nine
and we actually have five good games this week. The last few weeks, you know, there's been one or two. The other three, we've actually gone to college to fill out our five. But this week we have five good NFL picks and also the NCAA football game of the century as it's being tabbed. Number one LSU at number two Alabama.
That'll be a good one for sure. We got NBA lockout news. Are Derek Fisher and Billy Hunter arguing? Are they not? Are they on the same page? And to Jesse's question, who
he had
really
a good
cares?
Take about it though. He had a good take. You know, well, is Fisher actually is he playing both sides? You know, what exactly is his are his motives?
Yeah, there's been questions of whether or not he's cut a deal on the side with Stern.
Well, and is this the owners just trying to float something out there that's trying to be divisive to the players? Big Baby also tweeted today. Big Baby also tweeted today that
what's the lockout?
Yeah. He said we should just accept 51% and move on, and that's pretty divisive, I think. We'll talk more about that. We have, like Andy said, the NCAA game of the century, and of course at the end we always find something random and kind of fun to talk about, so you can bet on that for today. Topic number one, though, is the Yayers, the Dodgers, our beloved
Doyers.
Los Angeles team. And for the last, since fansmanship.com started, and actually before that, Andy, I know I've been railing against Frank McCourt. I would love for McCourt to be gone. And this morning we got our wish.
And he was forced to basically surrender the Dodgers. He went out kicking and screaming based on his debt and his settlement with Jamie. And he may end up leaving town with a little bit of money, you know, most of which he's going to be paying Jamie and he's going to be paying all of his lawyers. But I guarantee you this, he will leave with absolutely zero dignity, which is a good thing because he just needs to hit the next chowder bowl back to Boston. And
you know, the downhill all started when he signed Manny to the second contract. And since then, I think everything's been sliding. His smoke and mirrors stopped actually working as soon as Manny got busted for his smoke and mirrors, for his steroids. And
he was just trying to have a kid. I mean, give him a break.
But even on his way out, he was, what did he say? That his spokesman said, oh, he came to a realization. Just every once in a while, you come to a realization of what needs to happen.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, McCourt had that realization this morning and decided, you know, this needs to happen.
Right.
Like it was his idea.
Nothing's changed.
He came up with it.
You know, that's funny. It's because nothing's changed. It's the same line of BS. Even on his way out the door, it's still the same doublespeak, you know. I mean, you're not fooling anybody. Why does he still think that he's fooling somebody, even on the way out? And
he's pathological.
Plachke actually had a good quote. He said, don't let the Chavez hit you in the ravine on the way out the door. You got a kick out of that.
And, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when the Dodgers were winning, all he could talk about was how he was going to make Dodger Stadium a better place. He had all these plans for renovation. And even then, my question was, what's wrong with Dodger Stadium, number one, that we have to renovate it? And number two, that's a lot of money that you're planning on putting into other things. What about the team? And we've seen over the last couple of years that, you know, the idea of going with, you know, your farm system was good when, you know, when those guys were still young. Now that those guys are, you know, the Kershaws, the Kemps, the Billingsleys, all those guys.
They need
guys,
to be re-signed.
Ethier, they need to be re-signed. But not only that, they need other guys put around them better than Juan Uribe and Jamie Carroll. And we haven't seen that kind of commitment. And so, obviously, you know, the fans spoke this year. They didn't come to the games. You know, MarkCubanSaveTheDodgers.com organized a bunch of rallies, and
there's 7,500 fans a game that they lost.
Something like
that. They didn't hit three for the first time in however many years. It didn't hit 3.
I think I want to say since 2000, something like early 2000s, 2002, something like that, when they were really.
And the best part about it is the fans had something to do with it. There's not a lot of times where the fans can have their say in ownership. And this time, it was the fans. They spoke loudly. They got what they wanted.
How about LA fans actually standing for something?
Right.
The get there late, leave early.
Well,
Dodger
they love
fans.
Their Dodgers. You know, win or lose. You know, they just want a good product on the field, something that's real, not something that's, you know, where things are being done behind closed doors. Their money's getting taken away. They don't want that. They just want some honest win or lose.
And you know what? When you have Vin Scully calling your games, it's not the worst thing in the world if you're sitting in your car avoiding traffic listening to Vin to tell you what's
the
going on.
The golden pipes.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and one of my favorite blogs that's a Dodger blog, too, is VinScullyIsMyHomeboy.com. Let's give him a shout out. There's some great blog names out there. VinScullyIsMyHomeboy.com and MikeSosa'sTragicIllness.com are both up there.
Well, based on the fact that Frank used the Dodgers basically as his own personal piggy bank, you know, what did he take over the life of his ownership, like $150 million out of the team?
And he broke the team up into
187.
Five or ten unique organizations like Blue Land that the Dodgers paid that he ran or that he was somehow the owner of. I mean, business wise, wasn't dumb.
His son was pulling in six figures to do what?
To go to college.
go to Stanford Business School.
And then they hired the psychic in Boston.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
His hairstylist got what? $3,500
Vladimir
a cut.
Spunt,
hey,
Jesse.
In fairness,
Vladimir
though,
Spunt.
In fairness, he had a nice set of hair. The hair's looking good.
He did have a good cut, at least.
Let's stop right there. We're going to be back. We're going to talk a little bit more Dodgers and some other things here on fansmanship.com podcast on fansmanship.com. Welcome back to the fansmanship.com podcast, by the fans, for the fans. Of course, you can find our podcast anytime. You've probably already been there if you're listening, fansmanship.com. And you can also find us on iTunes and subscribe. So, you know.
It's free.
Get out of here.
No, seriously.
It's free.
Welcome to the fan.
Whoa. What's going on there? It is free.
Get out of here. Welcome.
No, really, it is.
Oh, for
what are you doing over there?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to do this, and it's
we're
not working
with
very
your dinghy.
Well. So back to the Dodgers here, because we're all Dodger fans, and we love our boys in blue. Today also marked a pretty good day. There were three gold gloves won by the Dodgers
and
a silver slugger.
Yes,
Of course, Matt Kemp won the gold glove like we kind of expected, and actually, kind of interestingly, Clayton Kershaw won the gold glove for pitchers, which is kind of interesting. He is an athletic dude. He played center.
He made a few outstanding plays.
He was Matt Stafford's center in high school. Matt Stafford, of course,
he was an offensive lineman in high school?
He was a center on the JV team.
Oh, okay, JV.
Before he...
That's understandable.
Absolutely. And so Kershaw's a good player. And
what
like
about
said,
Ethier, though? I had a conversation with one of
That's
my neighbors
weird.
That drove by right when I was leaving to come here, and he goes, yeah, you got three gold gloves, man. You know, he's all fired up. And I go, what about Ethier? What... I don't understand that one. He goes, well, he didn't make any errors. So I guess that's one of the reasons why he didn't make any errors
catch
in the outfield.
The ball.
Yeah, you better make
that's
sure
all you
catch
gotta
the
do.
Ball. Yeah, that's all you got to do. But there
catch,
were a few times
catch
where
the ball.
He didn't make the play just because they didn't give him an error. Doesn't
you
mean
you moron?
You're the moron.
But, yeah, but I agree. You know, he was a solid right fielder. But are you telling me there weren't three better outfielders than Andre Ethier in the National League?
Who's a better defensive right fielder?
Outfielder. Isn't it just three outfielder positions?
I think it's right field.
I'll have to look that up.
Check it out, Andy. But who's a better defensive right fielder?
Yeah.
Who plays for the Diamondbacks?
Justin Upton.
There you go, Justin Upton.
Okay.
I don't know. He did. Who's, if he didn't make an
error. Does Hunter Pence play right field?
Yeah, but he's not better than Ethier. No. He's
really? Hunter Pence has like a hose pipe.
He just looks uncoordinated out there.
He's like the white Raul Mondesi.
He's like the white Matsui, the way I see him. He looks like he's on ice skates out there.
Kinda,
okay, okay.
He's kinda like, yeah, he's not
the... He's kind of ogre.
He goes hard, man.
It's like Peter Pan bouncing around in the outfield.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's three better outfielders, though. Chris Young is probably a better outfielder, if it's outfielders. I'm pretty sure it's three outfielders.
Let me figure it out. I'm going to look up all the winners right here.
Dead
please
we're please talk about something else.
Please continue.
So, the other thing is Matt Kemp's, I think, second straight Silver Slugger. No. First Silver Slugger.
Yeah, first.
First Silver Slugger as a center fielder. And, of course, he almost went 40-40. My question for you, Jesse and Andy, and it's probably an unknown for all of us right now, but what does the new ownership mean for the Dodgers, both in signing both of their big players, Kershaw and Kemp, to long-term deals, but also in thinking about things like Fielder or Pujols in the offseason? I think it puts them completely out of the running. If they were kind of in the running before, I think putting a $200 million debt on a team before the guy buys it, I think is out of the question.
Well, I don't think it's realistic to expect a new ownership to come in and immediately make this huge splash with a Pujols who probably won't even leave St. Louis, and a Fielder who's in 4 years, everyone's going to be regretting that whoever got it gets him is going to be regretting that deal.
Cause right.
He's not exactly like the most, he's a great hitter, but he's not exactly the most fit guy.
Fielder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, whoever comes in, they're number one priority and beyond 2012.
Get the book straight, right?
Figure out where all the money's hidden.
Right.
Dig up right field and try and find the buckets of money that McCourt hid out there.
If and Rupert then, didn't take it, McCourt did, I think.
And then to lock up Kershaw and Kemp, you have to lock up those two guys. Those two guys are
no
the
doubt.
Face of your franchise.
Yeah,
you know,
no doubt.
Ethier's probably going to walk. I don't expect
a lot of people are
back.
Talking about that, and I think it's interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see who the new owner is, and if it's a better owner than McCourt, I think you have a chance to keep a guy like Ethier. A lot of people are kind of down on Ethier because he didn't have a great power year this year. Remember 2 years ago, he was about a third of the way into the season leading in Triple Crown for the National League before he broke his hand, and he hasn't been right since. And
well,
so,
he was on one leg and nine fingers there for a while.
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
so. Yeah, he's been hurt. If he can get healthy, or maybe he doesn't, maybe Dodger fans hope that, you know what, this is a year that we're maybe not going to do what we need to do. Maybe this is a year that Ethier kind of goes down in his trade value until the Dodgers sign him at a discount. I've read a lot about you know.
That's not a bad idea, or at least a better way to think
I don't hope
of
he's
it.
Hurt, but, you know, it's something to
They're
think
gonna
about.
Have to pay for him. They're probably going to have to overpay because you know someone else is going to want him.
There's no two better outfielders in the National League on the same team. I mean, there might be some that are as good, but Kemp and Ethier, when they're doing well, I think, you know, it's what you have to do. The problem with the Dodgers has always been first base and left field in the last couple of years, and I don't see any relief coming there. You guys?
Well, yeah, not this offseason.
No, but unfortunately.
The hard thing for the Dodgers is, okay, so you have new ownership coming in. You've got to balance signing your Kemp and your Kershaw, and then on top of that, they've got to figure out a way to build off of the second half of last year, which was actually really successful.
Right, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, who do you keep? I mean, who do you keep? Who do you send walking? You keep a guy like Carroll, right? You want to keep a utility guy.
The best breakdown I've seen is on MSTI, Mike Social Tragic Illness, Mike, I think, Petrelio. Does a pretty good job usually of breaking the Dodgers down. And he put something out a couple days ago that talked about you only keep a few of the guys. Carroll's somebody you re-sign. You re-sign a few other guys, but there were like probably 15 free agents that in his proposed universe. And of course, it's all proposed, and now there's a new owner.
You stay with Gordon at shortstop. You get rid of Blake at third. You find someone.
He talked
else
about.
There.
I mean, Uribe's got to start the opening day at third. But he also talked about signing Wilson Bedemit
is the one I talked about for third base. I see that happening
since he's been there before.
The outfield, you know, left field is a problem, and they don't have. But they limped along with the left fielder last year.
Right.
You know, maybe Jerry Sands steps up and becomes something special.
Yeah, they talked about Sands, Ethier. And it seems like there was somebody else. I don't have it.
Well, speaking of outfielders, the Gold Glove Award does go to a left fielder, a center fielder, and a right fielder because the Golden Glove for left field went to Gerardo Parra of the Diamondbacks.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Parra, Kemp, Ethier. Placido Polanco got it for third base, if you can believe that.
He didn't even play most of the year. He was on my fantasy team. Is there, I mean... It speaks to the lack of depth at certain positions, and all of us play fantasy baseball. We're actually in the same league here, but I just look at some of these positions and it makes me just shake my head as far as the lack of depth at something like left field. I mean, really, is there nobody better than Gerardo Parra to play left field or Andre Ethier in right field?
Well, not defensively.
Yeah. Come on, there's got to be. I mean,
well, you know, and
what's this world coming to?
I'm serious.
It's coming to some football picks. That's what I think.
Okay.
I think that's what
all right. Let's get into the start of our NFL picks here, and then we'll break, and then we'll come back and get
right.
The rest
we'll
of them,
just run through this real quick. Like we were saying earlier, there are actually some watchable games this week. The past few weeks, there have only been one or two. They've kind of been. I don't know if there's such a thing as the dog days of an NFL season, but these past 2 weeks seem to be that way.
With all the bye weeks in the middle of everything, yeah.
Starting with an early game, the. New York fighting Rex Ryans at the Buffalo Bills. This is an interesting matchup that you wouldn't have thought would be very
AFC
interesting.
AFC East, yeah. You know, at the beginning of the year, I mean, Rex Ryan games are always interesting, right?
Yeah.
So it's the Jets at the Bills.
Yeah, Jets at the Bills.
Bills coming off a big win against Washington, although Washington's looked pretty crappy lately.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't call that a big win, but hey, any win
in
the
Toronto,
NFL, I guess, could be considered a big
What's
win,
Buffalo's record now?
That puts Buffalo, I think, at 5-3, yeah.
Yeah, man. At Buffalo, the Jets haven't impressed me. This is a good game to pick. Jesse,
right.
I'll let you pick first.
Well,
who do you
think?
We're picking straight up here, not against the spread.
Rex, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Rex said he was going to win the Super Bowl this year. So, you know.
Oh, really? This year?
Yeah, and last year.
Oh, wow.
And
why
I think he said
me?
He's going to win it next year also.
Yeah.
But you know, if he was in San Diego, he would
in
have won
five years, man, we will be Super Bowl champions.
If he was in San Diego, he would have won five or six Super Bowls.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, but, I'm going to go with the Jets.
The Jets?
Yeah. Well, what is it? Against the spread, I'd say what? Minus?
I don't even know. What yeah. I think Buffalo was probably going to be favored by at
really?
Least three or four.
You
sure.
Think?
In Buffalo?
I think the Jets
yeah.
are getting 1.5.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we're picking straight up, though.
Straight up.
I'm
going to pick the Bills.
I'm picking Buffalo by a field goal. I just don't think the Jets are the same team that they used to be,
yeah.
or at least that their hype said that they were.
On the road, not going to happen.
And I'm going with the Mennonite marvel that is Ryan Fitzpatrick from
Harvard.
But he will pick apart the Jets pass defense. I think that, and
you think they're overrated.
I think they are overrated, and I think that Fred Jackson will have a lot to do with the victory too, because he is a good changeup and he did do some big things last week. So I'm going with the Bills by a field goal next
the
game.
Bills. Circling the wagons.
Yeah. You guys are probably right because I just picked the Jets. So based on my percentages,
but that's the NFL though. I mean, you never know, and so many of these games you look at and you go, oh man,
I think
I'm
at about 500 so far, and you figure picking. You know, just straight up winner, you could be over 500, but
it's hard.
Not thus far. Next game, Tampa Bay at New Orleans, an NFC South rivalry that is a budding rivalry that has had some bad blood the past few years. Tampa Bay has been down. They're starting to come around. New Orleans is kind of the bully on the block, but this week it is in New Orleans. it is a game that's going to be played indoors, and I like them bouncing back from that devastating loss they had last week, losing
debacle
to St. Louis.
Debacle is the word that...
Debacle. That is a good word.
I think it's pronounced debacle in this case. Or debacle.
I wrote down the word, too, to describe Philip Rivers. That was another word I'm going to use later.
Debacle.
Debacle.
Yeah, and so I got to agree with you, Andy. I think coming off that game with Breeze and Peyton having some time to kind of get their head straight, you know, that week after surgery has got to be tough for Sean Payton. Probably the week of, he's got a lot of adrenaline going, first time in the box.
Is he
going
to be back on the field?
I don't know if that matters so much as just the idea that you know, they're going to get back to it. I think the Bucks are a solid 500, maybe a 9-7 kind of team.
And they are unproven on the road.
And the NFC South is tough, but they're on the road. It's in New Orleans. The Saints are going to be pumped. I got to go with the Saints.
I'm picking the Saints also, which means we're probably all wrong.
That's NFL.
I got New Orleans by 10. Next game, the New York Giants at the New England Patriots.
The G-man.
Again, I think this is going to be another game where, a team that's known as one of the best teams in the league got beat last week, and they're going to have a little chip on their shoulder. And I think New England gets over that loss to Pittsburgh by beating a team that they're simply better than. I mean, they're just better than the Giants. Straight up, and they are at home. I'm taking New England by a touchdown.
You know, I have both of the Giants. I have two out of the three Giants wide receivers on my fantasy team. I have Manningham and Victor Cruz, and Hakeem Nicks is out. And so while I think Eli Manning is going to have a lot of yards, I think that the Patriots' defense bends and doesn't break. A lot of field goals for the Giants. And, the Patriots are the Patriots, man. You got to...
They rarely lose two in a row.
I picked against them last year or last month, last week, whatever it was. It seems
last
like a
century.
Month ago. Yeah, about 9 years ago.
It was last month.
Good.
I picked against them in the Super Bowl. What was it? The Super Bowl in 85.
I got to go with the Patriots.
How about you, Jesse? What do you think?
Sure.
Sure. Why not?
No, I think both of the New York. I think that everybody talks about the New York media machine, and I think that New Yorkers really, 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 and I'm going to add another really, want the Jets and the Giants to be good, and they pump them up every year, and I think perpetually every year they're overrated.
They are overrated every year. That is a very good point.
Overrated.
That hype machine definitely plays a big role. Fourth game on the slate, the undefeated Green Bay Packers go to San Diego, and I think it's going to be a while until Philip Rivers gets over that CQ debacle that he had, especially, there's that word again, especially this week against the defending Super Bowl champs who are undefeated. I don't think Green Bay has much trouble, even though it is in San Diego. Green Bay can play good in any kind of weather. They can play good indoors. They can play good in, San Diego weather. They can play good in the snow. I think the Packers stay on track and they win by, I'm going to just say one score.
Okay, Packer fan. No, I definitely think that San Diego gets exposed against better teams. San Diego has a lot of holes. I think that over time, you're going to look back at the Drew Brees, Philip Rivers thing, and this is starting to show right now, and see that, man, that was a horrible, decision to keep Rivers. And I mean, they had Brees, but they didn't believe in him because they played Doug Flutie
right.
all around him. And
Brees
also
is barely
Ryan,
6 feet tall in his stilts.
Right, right. Brees isn't that big, but it sure hasn't been an issue in New Orleans, has it? I think the Chargers continue to just always be, a step late and a buck short.
Well, they have running back issues too. I think it's going to hurt him.
Tolbert's got concussion situation, and Matthews isn't great. I say the Packers. I think somehow the Chargers find a way to lose it. The story of the game won't be that the Packers totally dominated. It'll be that the Chargers had so many opportunities.
Well, they just can't
get
out of their own way, it seems.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I think you guys are focusing on the Chargers a little bit. Green Bay is a really good team. And they
agreed.
They found a way to win every week. And I think Green Bay beats them just because they're better, not because Philip Rivers is terrible.
There you go.
Buffalo is 5-2, by the way, not 5-3. So
5-2.
If that makes a big difference. The fifth game on the slate, the Sunday night football game with Al Michaels. And Chris Collinsworth.
You talk about, just real quick, you mentioned Al Michaels. I was telling my wife this the other night. I used to watch games that John Madden did just because it was John Madden. And that was one of the only ones that I'd ever do that with. Most of the play-by-play guys are good, but there's nobody who stands out. Al Michaels stands out still. And I will watch a Sunday night game for a while just because Al Michaels is doing it. I watched that Jets and
really
whatever
just because
that,
of
that Dolphins game the other night.
He's not just kind of there. He's not just kind of the guy to do it. There is actually
there's
some,
a voice. There's a voice really? There, and whoever's with him, whether it's God, who's been with him over the years.
Collinsworth, was Sims with him for a while? No.
Was it the comedian? Who is it with him for a while?
No, that was Kornheiser. On
Dennis Miller?
That was Monday Night Football.
But that was when Michaels was doing Monday Night Football.
Are you sure it was him?
Yeah, it was Miller.
It was, really.
Miller and Michaels.
That's not a good combination.
That didn't work. No. I mean, but Michaels still stood out. And Michaels and Madden was like the ultimate for me. But I think I'll watch, you know,
Dennis
I'll watch
Miller and his obscure humor that no one gets. Well, that looked like a steak knife there stuck in a New York steak, but it's slightly overdone on the fifth wheel.
Wow, he was slower than
Queen
Elizabeth.
What are you talking about?
Queen Elizabeth.
Get to the
second.
Joke, my friend. Anyway, the fifth game, Baltimore at Pittsburgh, the Sunday night game. Baltimore took it to Pittsburgh in Baltimore, first week of the season, if you guys remember that game. It's an absolute blowout. But Baltimore isn't the same team that they were back then. They did lose to Jacksonville recently, which I think was... what was it?
Inexplicable.
Well, Flacco threw for like 69 yards. Yeah, it was a debacle. He threw for like 69 yards in the game, which is inexcusable. And Pittsburgh isn't that same team that was down in week one. They beat New England last week, albeit at home. But I'm taking the home team in this one. Pittsburgh in a tight battle by a field goal.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh's better here as well. Pittsburgh seems like they're on their way up, and Baltimore seems like they're on their way down a little bit.
Who beat who down week one? I'm trying to remember.
Pittsburgh beat Baltimore 27-7 or something. It was over at halftime.
It was a beatdown. I think in this rivalry, whenever something like that happens, I think it's one of those rivalries where the opposite happens the next time. So I'm going to pick Baltimore going into Pittsburgh.
No, Baltimore did get their butts whooped.
Yeah.
Oh, but
I'm picking Baltimore going into Pittsburgh laying it down. Yeah, the road team again. In this series,
Rice is a difference maker.
I don't think the road team matters as much, and I think Flacco, after a crap performance, I think he comes back. I think he's completely underrated because of how good that defense is. And I know he had a crappy game last game, but I think Flacco starts to really get hot in this game and pulls Baltimore to a win. I don't know if it's going to be by like 20 or 30 points, but I'd say I'll go out on a limb, a couple touchdowns.
Really?
Yeah, I'll say
two
that.
Scores.
Dos. Cool. So that's all five.
That's all five.
And Andy, did you write down my picks? Because I might not remember later on.
Why don't you write them down? They're your picks.
Why don't you face write them down? All right. We're going to be back on fansmanship.com podcast along with Jesse Pereira sitting in for Lucas. Andy Stevens, I'm Owen Main. We will be back. Welcome back to fansmanship.com podcast, the only place for your fansmanship.com podcasting needs.
Don't you forget it. The only place.
There's no other place where you can get a fansmanship.com podcast.
This is fansmanship?
Hot stuff.
It is hot stuff.
Oops, I guess I'm in the wrong. I gotta go.
No. You know, if you gotta go.
Get out of here.
Yeah, get out
of here. We talked about the Dodgers. We talked about football. Let's get to another sport. Last night was supposed to be the opening night of NBA, and
Chicago at Dallas. I was excited for it. Then I just turned on the TV and I go, "Wait a minute, canceled."
I started to miss the NBA in the last off day in the World Series when there should have been like the last tune-up NBA preseason game. I started to really miss the NBA and haven't stopped. I mean, I think, you know, right now it's a Wednesday night. There's probably a college football game on. There's probably poker on. Maybe some soccer from somewhere. But that's about it. And it's
poker.
God, if there's anything
might
worse
be a dog
to watch
race
on TV,
or two, I can do that.
Right? Or horse races on Fox Sports.
You degenerate.
I mean, honestly.
Check ESPN, the Ocho.
The Ocho, dodgeball. Absolutely. So, you know, the lockout's still going on. People thought there might be some movement made last week. They made some progress, or so it was reported. And then David Stern came out last Friday night and said, actually, we didn't make as much progress as we thought. We're canceling games, I think, until through the month of November and maybe early in December. the question now is, are there going to be games before Christmas? I don't know why Christmas is such a big deal. I guess they get good ratings for that game. That's the first ABC game they do during the year.
And it's always the most fixed game in the entire schedule. Right,
like the Shaq versus Kobe, right, or LeBron, right, versus Kobe or whatever. so take on the NBA lockout. I think Jesse has a pretty strong take on this one.
Well, I think the question on everybody's mind is, who cares? it's like you said, you know, okay, so I went out to eat last night and there was nothing on because, you know, football doesn't come on a Tuesday, baseball's over. So, I mean, in that situation, it would have been nice if there was a basketball game on, but it's not something it's not like an event.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody was freaking out for the NFL because it's like, oh my God, what am I going to do on Sunday?
Right.
You know, my wife's going to make me go to church or something. You know? Yeah. But now with basketball, it's just kind of like everybody's, it'll start up when it starts up. Nobody seems really panicking or.
You know, you mentioned that about football. And let me say this, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but how much of football being an event is based on the fact that it happens over, for most of the season, 2 days? There's a Sunday game, there's a Sunday all day, and then there's one Monday night game, and it's compacted into one day. And I've said this about the bowl system before, and the reason why college football to me is on a downhill slide, and I know the TV ratings and the money would say otherwise, but for me, there's something really awesome about this like day-long event of like football craziness.
Right.
And New Year's Day is no longer that because everybody's competing. I used to love the fact that I could turn from channel to channel and find between the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl and whatever else.
Sugar Bowl, the granddaddy of them all.
Even if they're back-to-back on the same day, that's great. But when they start to be spread out over multiple days, it's the same with the NCAA tournament. It's this like Thursday bonanza, right? And I know there's still a Thursday bonanza, but there's stuff before and stuff after. And so it makes me wonder if the product's watered down. One of the great things about the NFL is it's not watered down. I know we're talking about the NBA here, but it's something that I think about.
Even before people even thought that a lockout was coming or even knew, the casual fan even knew it was coming, they still thought that the NBA was watered down. You know, they thought, you know, why are these guys playing 82 games? You know, it's just an 82 games practice schedule basically to get tuned up for the playoffs. So, yeah, I can agree with that.
Well, I remember the last time the NBA had a lockout, which, what was that, 15 years ago?
Yeah,
now,
95,
like
90, yeah.
They played 55 games. Everybody was saying, "Oh, this is
99." Yeah,
99. That's right.
Yeah, Knicks and Rockets.
Phil Jackson said, "Put an asterisk by the
Knicks and Spurs." I think.
Yeah, Spurs won. Phil Jackson.
Was that Duncan's first year?
Yeah, he goes.
I remember a lot of
people saying, "Put an asterisk around that one."
This is how long the season should be. Is 55. I remember a lot of people saying that, but you know, obviously the NBA wants to make its money.
Well, the players aren't gonna. Yeah, and the players do too.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, they have enough. You know, diehard fans, I think, to keep it going and that will tune in and watch these regular season games. But
me and you.
Yeah, but how will the casual fan, how will they gain more casual fans by cutting down games? Like, what's the benefit there?
Well, you could do something, again, you know, you think about the NFL where they have games on Sundays. I mean, if you had a 55-game season.
So just have an extravaganza
you could have, like, you know, big Thursday
nights. Like a mid-season tournament or something like that.
Or you could have games on consistent nights. I know in the past they've in shortened seasons, like for
they have a Wednesday night game, right, and the Lakers always play on a Friday night.
In shortened seasons for baseball
Sunday
in the past, they've done the first half winner and the second half winner playing off against each other and things like that. And so, you know, I don't think it's ever going to happen. 82 games is 82 games. It's going to stay that way. But let's talk about when you think it's going to happen again. I mean, is there even going to be basketball this year?
Well, what are they fighting over exactly? Is it
2%?
So it is the ratio
2.5%
between 52-48 or 50-50 player owner revenue?
52-50 is the question.
Okay, how many fans? Well, my question is like, how many fans are they going to lose, and is it worth that 1 or 2% in the long run based on how many fans they're going to lose? Like, what is the cost breakdown of that?
Here's my take on the NBA and the lockout. How many fans are they going to lose? The ones that they still have, and I think the NBA has been kind of teetering, the ones that they still have, the fans that watched last year, will watch whenever the lockout comes on again, whether it's because of LeBron James and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and the Big Three and the intrigue surrounding that, whether it's because they like the team and they're just diehard fans, whether it's because they like the NBA. The NBA is a product that's super unique. I mean, as much as you can talk about dudes standing around, those guys are amazingly good. And the difference between the NBA and college is still a huge difference as far as the skill level. You think those guys are just running around randomly. There's plays called on every play almost, in the NBA. There's a play that they're running, whether they're running it right or not, who knows, but there's a play that those guys are running, and it's a cat and mouse game the whole time. And so
and if something breaks down, they are that
they're good enough to just rise
elite
up and
talent to be able to just do it one on one.
So my point is that, the fans like you and I, Andy, and Andy and I are both pretty big Laker fans. We'll watch a Laker game, whether it's, Pig Miller or Pau Gasol in the post.
Dale three, run of the point. I don't care.
To the left. Right. Dribble to the left, take the jumper.
Big old dribble all the way up to his eye level.
Yeah, or Eldon complaining.
Big Eldon and looking like I'm asleep. Man, that's a bad call, but I look like I just
woke up. We'll watch the NBA either way because we get a kick out of it. But
and for Stu Lance, I'll always just tune in for Stu. Here's on the Lakers Basketball Network.
Here's the thing that throughout the lockout, I think there's enough good stories after the lockout. When you talk about Miami, when you talk about the Lakers, when you talk about some of these teams being really good, the Knicks being resurgent, I think the NBA is poised to make a big jump post-lockout if they have a good plan about it, and especially if they can market the season as something
different.
Oh,
it's going to explode.
It has a lot of potential.
All the pundits are just going to go nuts.
It has a lot of potential. And
For the next, I'd say, 3 to 4 days, and unless it happens like on a Friday, that week, that whole week will just be dedicated to basketball and football. Kind of take a
Let's
second
catch
seat.
Up on
but
the NBA.
But just for 1 week, and right. then football take over.
Right, right. Like but the point being that there's a lot of interesting stories to catch up with. There's going to be a lot of, I think more than you think, there's going to be a lot of talent that gets fat. There's going to be a lot of talent that gets out of shape. There's going to be a lot of guys coming back not in the right mindset.
Sean Kemp in it.
And teams like the Thunder could be affected, Say Kendrick Perkins comes back and he's Sean. I'm not saying he has, but, you never know. Some of those teams that have built really solid foundations may come back and not be as solid.
Well, why don't they just settle? If it makes sense in a basic compromise, if it's 52-48 or 50-50, 51-49. Okay, let's play. What are we waiting for?
And that was the exact point that Big Baby Davis made. He's a free agent already, Glenn Davis from the Celtics, and he tweeted today, "Well, let's just take 51 and go." Now, it's not his place to say that publicly, and that's. You got to be a doofus to
Baby Shrek,
and not that Big Baby has shown me anything different than the fact that he's a doofus over the course of the last couple of years. But I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Well, Kevin Garnett had to give him a spanking that one time on the sideline. Basically, he came over crying. He gave him a spanking. Well, it wasn't an actual spanking; it was a verbal spanking. But you could tell it was like a father talking to his son. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, the Big Baby thing. He's never impressed me. And Kevin Garnett's no angel in the negotiations either, or so reports have said.
That's kind of old news, but yeah.
Well, we haven't been on the air for a little while. We're gonna come back. We're gonna follow up on the Dodgers a little bit more and get to the NCAA game of the century when we come back. You're listening to fansmanship.com podcast here on none other than fansmanship.com.
Welcome.
Scorching hot.
Welcome back to fansmanship.com podcast on.
Oh, God, it is scorching hot.
It's so hot right now.
Sorry, I fell asleep during the NBA conversation.
We're back, and we're going to get back to the Dodgers in just a second. Before we do, and in the spirit of We Miss You, Luke, let's play a little game here, Andy. I'm going to read you a number, and I'll give you the year and the sport. Maybe even the team that it came from. And you gotta
wait. You're confusing me already.
I'm gonna read you a number.
Okay.
And you gotta guess what that number is. What's it's kind of a guess that
stat game.
You're
gonna read me
a
number and I guess what's
we're gonna play this.
So if you say two, I say two, right?
You say the number of who's number two in the NBA?
Okay.
Like who is a number guy that's number two. Oh, with number two jersey.
Derek Fisher,
there you go. So that would be the game. If I said 100 and I said it's an NBA record, you might say that it's the
most points scored
in the game by Wilt Chamberlain.
Almost Kobe.
There you go.
Number of women Wilt Chamberlain hit in one night. How about that?
All right, so here's the number. The number is 200.
The magic number is.
We were talking about 1990s Lakers a second ago. The number is 215. 215.
The amount of cigarettes Vlade Divac smoked in one night.
Possibly.
I don't know.
But not correct. We've talked about 90s Lakers, and I'll give you a hint. It's a stat from a guy from the Lakers from that time period who also played, interestingly enough, for the Suns before he went to the Lakers. He's the Lakers' leading scorer in, I think, at least one season.
Oh, Sed Sabalos?
There you go. So it's a Sed Sabalos stat.
215?
Yep.
Was that his weight?
No. What was what was Sed Sabalos known for besides scoring and being a head case?
The blindfold dunk in the slam dunk
competition. The blindfold dunk, sure. What other stat besides points?
That was his combined score.
What other stat besides points did Sed rack up?
Oh, okay. Was it a amount of dunks? They didn't keep track of dunks.
Not dunks, no.
Three-point shots,
It wasn't
free throws made.
It wasn't total rebounds. But Sed was kind of a garbage
offensive
man.
Rebounds.
Okay. Offensive rebounds. So 215 is
wow.
215 is the total
like
number.
Leading
of,
the camel to water on that one.
Of off, Luke might have got that. I'll give Luke
connect
credit.
The dots, I guess.
Yeah. 215 was the total number of offensive rebounds that Sed Sabalos got. The next highest Laker, the next highest season, he got 215 in 95-96. The next highest season that he ever had was 172. He did that twice. So there you go. There's your random Sed Sabalos stat for the day. You're welcome, Luke Johnson. Onward and upward. We got some college football coming up, and you know I like the NFL a little better than college football. But let's get talking here. We have
that's
the game,
kind of my department.
We have the game of the century coming up here, Andy. Talk to me a little bit about Alabama versus
LSU.
LSU looked amazing last week, or was it last week or 2 weeks ago that they just dismantled?
It was 2 weeks ago.
Was that Florida that they dismantled?
Yeah.
I mean, they took them out behind the woodshed, man. It was not a pretty
Florida's sad. Not as good as they have been in years past.
Yeah, but LSU, I mean, they looked unbeatable.
Yeah. Well, LSU is at Alabama, and I think the key to this game is, and you know, I've been talking about this game, they've been talking about it for almost 2 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key to the game is that home field advantage goes a long way in the SEC. Breakout players go a long way because these teams are so good. They're so evenly matched. They're so talented overall that one breakout player can make the difference, and that's Trent Richardson for Alabama. So, I believe the home field will definitely play a part. I mean, there's a big difference between 100,000 fans screaming at you or staying quiet for you when you're, on offense. And I think Richardson gets over, and I think Alabama wins 20-16, somewhere in that area. It's going to be a low-scoring defensive game, but Richardson's going to have that one big play where he's going to break one, and it's going to be the backbreaker. LSU, they've been playing good all season, but, they still are kind of under-talented at the quarterback position. He's a fifth-year senior. They're based on 3 yards in a cloud of dust. He's not going to win you the game. He's more of a game manager, which is the way that a lot of SEC quarterbacks are. Both defenses are great, but again, going back to Richardson, he's the one deal maker that they can take it to the house anytime he touches it on either team, even against these great defenses. And I think that coupled with the fact that they're playing in Alabama wins by four.
Wow. And having watched LSU more than Alabama this year, I got to say that they're one of the most athletically impressive college football teams I've seen in a long time. I lived in SEC country for a couple years, and there's one thing that, kind of always happens, and that's that there are momentum changes throughout any SEC game. Even in games that don't really seem close, the team that's losing or the team that loses has a little bit of time where they have the momentum. And honestly, the game that I saw LSU play Florida never had the momentum. In my opinion, Florida,
no, LSU's defense was just too good.
Just dominated. And the other thing that I think is that when you play in the SEC every week, you're used to going on the road. You're used to going into hostile places. These are familiar places. They're not that far away from you. And Baton Rouge isn't that far away from Tuscaloosa. And so I'm going to go ahead and pick LSU. Over Alabama.
It's been pretty split, 50-50, people that I've talked to.
And you talk about breakaway guys.
It's kind of a coin flip.
Trent Richardson's a name that everybody's heard, but LSU, when I watch them, they have 3 or 4 offensive skill players that nobody knows who they are, but they're faster than everybody else on the field.
Yeah, both teams have those guys.
Can you name one of those guys?
No, but it was ridiculous. That's my point. They even if they get hurt, I mean, they just keep bringing guys in. And college football to me,
both teams are like that. But Richardson's different than them. Than everyone. He is. He's a Heisman Trophy candidate. He's an absolute freak.
Okay. Okay. I think that LSU's depth and defense is gonna just stifle Alabama like they've stifled everybody else, and by the time Alabama's done, it's gonna be kind of a
Son of a.
Real quick before we before we get back to the Yoyers, there's one more thing I wanted to hit on college football. What about Lane Kiffin crybabying after the game, the triple overtime loss to Stanford, where his team played so well? And, he had one timeout left at the end of that game. You just tell your guy to get down. Your guy needs to know the clock, not run laterally, waste 4 seconds, run out of bounds when there's maybe half a second left and you could have called a timeout, and then to complain to the referees. Yeah. I mean, that's just not the way. I mean, it just seems like Kiffin doesn't get it. That is not the way USC is as far as their level of pride. They've never been about that.
Well, LA college football is not in a good place right now. Between Lane Kiffin and Rick Neuheisel, you got really two guys who just are missing the mark in some way. When USC went into Notre Dame, they really did a great job on the road. But as soon as they get back in the Pac-12, they have this hiccup. And Andrew Luck's amazing
Stanford
player.
Is a great team.
Let's give them credit. And they've really built a program up there around a new stadium and Harbaugh. But
do you think Luck's performance, raised his stock for the Heisman based on him coming back towards the end? Or do you think it lowered it because he was almost beat by a USC team?
Everybody's talking about how Barkley's his stock went up.
He could be a top 10 pick.
Yeah, he's going to come out and he's going to be someone that people are going to go after Luck.
Which is crazy that the Pac-12, for how weak they're always perceived by other conferences.
Well, look at Colorado. Who made that Colorado pick? Was that you going, oh yeah, they could go 500 this year? I said, No. They're going to get absolutely demolished.
But that's based on the Pac-12. I mean, the Pac-12 is not exactly your... it's not the SEC. It's
they don't win with defense.
It's probably similar to it's not as good as the Big Ten this year.
No,
and not as good as the Big 12. Probably more like the Big East, kind of on par this year.
It's kind of a down conference, conference,
and there's teams that beat themselves.
It's on offensive steroids.
They beat themselves all the time, and to see two really good quarterbacks come out of there who are going to be good in the NFL. It's kind of an interesting paradox as far as that goes. Are there any other college football games this weekend?
We have
That are worth talking about.
Well, number 8, Oregon going to Washington. That's another game in the Pac-12. Oregon's favored by, I believe, about 16.
16 at Washington.
At Washington. I think it
they're
all depends.
Always favored by double digits.
Yeah. Well, they're just such a track meet team.
And Jesse, you're a big Oregon fan. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are on this one.
They will win
the week before Stanford.
Back to you.
Yes, they're going to run fast and score more points.
And then they're
going to
get back up on the ball and run it again. Yeah, they get back up on the ball and run it.
They're going to keep their fingers crossed that they have LaMike back for the Stanford game and that Thomas is 100%.
We are San Luis Obispo based, and so along with the Oregon Washington game, since Jesse's a big Ducks fan, I'll also be remiss to say Cal Poly is going to UC Davis this year. Last year, Davis came into Cal Poly and just
is that this week
just ripped their hearts out. Yeah, okay. Cal Poly at Davis this week on Saturday afternoon. And last year, Davis came in. They were down by, I think, 17 in the fourth quarter. Davis was at Cal Poly and just
we were at that game.
Just came back and kept kicking field goals. It was a kind of a random game. They kicked two field goals and scored two touchdowns in the
Cal
fourth
Poly
quarter.
Cal Poly had three and outs, four three and outs in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. It was really bad, and Davis is even worse this year. They're not a very good team, and Cal Poly has to win this game on the road to keep in the hunt for a playoff spot.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, because they have come back. What is the last
FCS.
Two games now? Their last two home games that have been on KSBY. They've come back in the fourth quarter and have won those games in just stunning fashion.
Fun games to watch, and what I've noticed, and since this is fansmanship, what I've noticed is that fans at Cal Poly football games are kind of like Dodger fans. They show up about 5 minutes into the game, especially in the student section. They start filtering in. People were noticing who were sitting around me the other night and actually talking trash about it. Hey, where'd everybody go? It's Halloween night. Is everybody in Chico? Is everybody at in Isla Vista? But the fans did show up, and it did fill in the stadium.
Well, they
and
bring him in from the dorms. That's what I noticed when we went to the South Dakota State game.
Yeah.
Pretty much at the end of the first quarter, I'd say there are these attendants that were just like, you know, waving their arm like a third
come
base
on
coach.
In.
And they're just coming in by the droves, and these kids don't look a day older than 18, so they're just bringing him in from the dorms just to fill the stands.
There's a pretty good picture of one of the guys who was in the stands. He had a Green Man costume, and Green Man
I saw that article.
Needs to be in more in full effect, I think, more often in Cal Poly. I think the costumes are only $35, and if you're out there listening and you happen to be going to a Cal Poly game, I think you should buy a Green Man costume and wear it. It was.
Where would you get something like that?
I think you go to greenman.com or Green Man costume. You could just Google Green Man costume, and it comes up. There's like all spandex suit for $35.
What's
with
that
a head.
Costume store over by Ben Franklin's? So back.
I think that's
there.
An Army Navy surplus store. You're
no,
thinking
no,
of.
No, no, no. It's back behind there. So I can't remember.
You could buy a, you know buy an Army guy costume.
I already have two or three red and yellow spandex suits, so I don't need another one. So. Two spandex suits is enough.
I prefer the pink one, Jesse.
that's awkward.
Yeah, that is a little awkward. But Cal Poly's got to stay alive and give themselves a chance then on the 12th to. Actually, this is their last Great West game coming up here at UC Davis, and then they give themselves.
That's right. I didn't know it's only a 5-team conference, right?
And it's dissolving after this year, and they're all moving to other conferences. But after the Davis game, they have a chance. If they win the Davis game, they have a chance to come back home and finish the season. And if they win out, then they have a chance at making the playoffs. They've beat some really highly ranked teams. South Dakota, who they played last week, and
do they still have to play Southern Utah? That's usually a really good team.
They beat Southern Utah Southern Utah, I think.
Wow.
Or no, that was the first home game they came back, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, they've done a good job. The only games they've lost are to San Diego State, Northern or Southern Illinois?
Northern Illinois.
Northern Illinois.
The Huskies.
And also they lost
home
to Eastern.
Forte.
Was it Eastern Washington? Or one of those Washington schools?
Yeah, I think it was Eastern Washington. Yeah. They're the team that has the
red field.
The red carpet.
There you go. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. With our last fun segment of the day.
Are we going to finish with a little more yoyers?
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially, absolutely. You know, we never get enough yoyers here on fansmanship.com. We'll be back. Feel that. Welcome back to the fansmanship.com podcast. Andy got Cedric Sabalist last segment.
Is that actually a verb?
I don't know if you can be Cedric Sabalist.
I don't think that's a verb.
If you're dunked on by a guy who's blindfolded, then yes, but that hasn't happened as far as I can see.
Can you get, who's the big guy who got arrested?
Oliver Miller, remember him?
Can you get Oliver Millard?
You want me to get Oliver Miller on the line?
No, I do not want to get Oliver Millard.
Yeah, man, I was just at this barbecue, you know, and this guy stepped up like he was trying to say something. I'm like, what? I got plenty of rib bones over here I could throw at you.
Andy, you want to tell us what happened with Oliver Miller?
That might have been going a little too far. I'm sorry.
Hey, we'll talk about Oliver in a second. Let's just get back to the Dodgers really quick.
You're going to get Jerry Hackney. Did you see that? Did you see that boxing clip that I posted?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Where he tries to run away. And
post that on Fansmanship, man.
He tries to jump up on the ropes. And the guy just blasts him and he gets tangled in the ropes.
He goes upside down and backwards. He tried to do like a wrestling move off the top rope.
He's trying to do a moonsault and just got blasted. And afterwards, they're interviewing. He goes, man, the only thing I hope is it doesn't start a trend when, you know, these guys from West Virginia, doesn't start a trend that when you run away and get blasted against the ropes in a boxing match, they're going to call it getting hackneyed.
He goes, I wasn't running away. I was just jogging across the ring.
It's like, where are you going?
That was the best quote out of that.
Yeah.
So who's going to buy the Dodgers, guys? Best guess.
Who
do you think is going to, and who would you like to see?
I unfortunately don't. And for all of our Mark Cuban Save the Dodger listeners, I don't think Mark Cuban is a realistic viable.
No,
well, he straight up said that it's too much.
Well, He's not paying a bill.
Not only that, but Bud Selig's a guy, and he made this mistake with McCourt. But Bud Selig's a guy that. You kind of got to be in the club, you know. He doesn't want any outside influences coming in and kind of, you know, changing the status quo.
Hasn't Cuban proven over the last few years that he can keep his mouth shut as far as being Stearns' guy and with the lockout too? He stayed, you know, solid.
And he said in interviews that last year he did finally learn because, you know, Carlisle and Dirk came up to him actually before the playoffs and. you know, had the Stones to come up and say, you know, listen, just shut up.
Told them to chill the hell out.
Chill out. Let us do our thing, and we're going to win. And sure enough, they did. So, you know, yes, I think he learned a great lesson, but do you think that Bud Selig sees him that way? He still sees him as this, you know, crazy entrepreneur.
That's one of the reasons why I think he lost out on the Rangers. I mean,
yeah, but you know what? Anything's better than McCourt at this point. You know, he's got an owner who comes in, and this point's been made over and over again. Cuban's going to, he would be an owner that comes in and spends money and does what it takes to win. And that, I don't think that, you know, as I don't think Selig can ignore that, not after the debacle that was McCourt.
McCourt. And I agree. Cuban would be a great story from the standpoint of, yes, he's got money, he can spend it. He's one guy, so it's one guy that you can look at. And when you juxtapose him with McCourt, it looks so much better. I think the other great story in that would be Mark Cuban competing with Jerry Buss, Mavericks and Lakers, and at the same time competing with Buss for LA's sports dollar between the Lakers and Dodgers. I think how those two got along would be really interesting to see, and how the two organizations, or whether they like acknowledged or like.
Well, their seasons only really overlap for how long? 2 months out of the year, once.
I know, but those are
the
two obsessions, man. Those are the two obsessions, and for a long time now, the Lakers have been the primary obsession. Although, if you were go back to the '80s, it was 50-50 some years.
Yeah,
when the Dodgers were
but
really good.
The Dodgers are a little different though, because it's more of a family environment, something that's more affordable. People are gonna go see the Dodgers.
Used to be more affordable.
You know, but the only reason why they haven't is if they just have an absolutely, you know, atrocious owner, and that's the case. So that's the only reason why Dodger fans wouldn't go. So I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with, you know, them fighting for LA sports. There's plenty.
I just think it would be an interesting.
There's plenty
story.
Of people out there to go to the game.
The other
the numbers are gonna jump way back up.
Oh, it's gonna be
year.
Huge. Whoever,
it's gonna jump up, and it's gonna be.
I think it's gonna be that way on purpose, just so the fans can kind of have their final, you know,
say.
F.
Let's sell out like the first, like, you know, 10 games or 20 games, you know.
Right.
Dodger, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so if it's not Cuban, it's going to be probably a situation like the Red Sox are, where you have like a ownership group.
Well, who's the group? Hersheiser and is Garvey. Is it Garvey?
I think they're in the
old
same
number
group.
Six.
Yeah, I think they're in the same group.
He's going to
Steve Garves.
He's going to own some baseball and pump some chicks. That's old number six.
So you got the Hersheiser Garvey group. I don't think that's as legitimate or as feasible. I think it's going to be just a bunch of business dudes from LA who are filthy freaking rich, who have billions. Oh, what's up? Look at that.
Does that mean we're out of time?
No, not yet.
We're on a hard clock. Is that what that is?
Not yet. No.
That's the engineer that's not here telling us it's time to quit.
No, this will go for a while. So here's the point, that I think it's just going to be a bunch of filthy rich businessmen who are.
You know, that has a different meaning with the tunes going.
What?
Don't get distracted.
I think we need to look at the elephant in the room and say that the Chinese are going to buy it.
It's damn possible. I'm not gonna say it's not possible. There are.
No, there's no way. I'm just.
When was that started? How long ago was that? That was about 2 months ago when that started.
That had to be a McCourt thing, right?
Right. I think it was just a diversion.
Right. Yeah. I think so too. And that music was pretty radical.
It was.
I can take it out a little later, I think, or maybe we'll leave it so that people know what's up.
Yeah. You got to represent LPMD.
LPMD.
Our boy Miles.
Miles Davis.
Hooking up the beats.
What up?
You always got to respect. Pay your respect to Miles.
And helping us with our audio too, although he's certainly not here now. So anything that's crappy about our audio, it's not Miles' fault. Watch Man, Woman, Wild, damn it. Back to the Big O, right? Oliver Miller. Yeah, Luke Johnson's favorite power forward / center of all time, maybe. Luke could probably tell us Oliver Miller's career free throw percentage if he was here. He's not. What did Oliver do, Andy?
Oliver Miller pleaded guilty to assault. The story reads that he apparently...
he was Robert Traylor before Robert Traylor.
Well, he assaulted his sister's... Who was it? His sister's boyfriend, it looks like.
Huh.
His girlfriend's... Huh. Oh, no, wait. His girlfriend's brother. After a cookout in Maryland, Oliver J. Miller, who played for the Suns and other teams in the 1990s, pleaded guilty to first-degree assault and carrying a handgun Tuesday in court.
Attaboy.
He took a handgun to court?
No. That is kind of funny.
I got a question. Over under on 375, how much Oliver Miller weighs today?
Probably over. He was pushing
350.
He was pushing 375 when he was playing.
You think?
Oh, yeah. You're... 6'9" and you're that wide.
That's a large man. Who else? So, largest men to play in the NBA. Tractor Trailer.
Currently or all time?
Just all time. Shaq, when he at his fattest.
How about Shaq's book?
At his most Shaqaliciousness.
I want to get that. Shaq's book that came out.
You know, I read Shaq's first book. I think recently. It was called Shaq Talks Back or something like that. And I really enjoyed it. Maybe because I was a Laker fan.
Thank you.
I think he did. Yeah, I think he did potentially.
If he didn't, that's then, good. He should have.
There's something wrong
with
really
missed out on a golden opportunity.
I always enjoy Shaq's books. I've always enjoyed Shaq. I think that if there was one like athlete or former athlete I could hang with for a day, I think having a day with Shaq, it would be a fun time, quite frankly.
I'd hang out with Ron Artest.
No.
We go down to the Best Buy.
Did you hear about that? Yeah.
What do you do?
What was that story where, no, he applied to work at Best Buy
one
time.
Yeah, so you get a discount on electronics. Come on. Yeah, everybody's done that.
But if you're not careful and you hang out with Ron Artest, you might find a chair leg in somebody's heart sometime. Yeah. Queensbridge.
Remember that story. We don't have to retell it.
Queensbridge. All right. So off we go. We'll leave our musings at hugest men in the NBA. You guys got any others off the top of your head, Andy?
What about Manute Bol?
Manute Bol was tallest. You know who is
God rest his soul. Oh, Gorgeous George Mirasan. Remember him? Gorgeous George.
Do I remember him?
Oh yeah.
Remember him?
He had some acting roles.
It was like
My Giant.
In some movies. Yeah.
My Giant.
His mouth didn't even move when he spoke.
Oh no. You know who I think
sure,
of too?
I'll help you, little kid.
For kind of the more classic looking giant, Mark Eaton.
Big Mark.
Big Mark, who was 7'4" for the Jazz.
Yeah.
He was a large individual. Anybody else off the top of anybody's head?
No.
Thank you.
Over.
Done. Thank you. All right. Well, listen, we want to say thanks to Jesse for sitting in for Luke.
Thank you.
Jesse Pereira, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Because when it's just me and this guy, sometimes, you know, it's just a little too much. We need to have that interjection.
Come baseball season, we'll for sure get Jesse's breakdown on fantasy picks.
Absolutely.
And we'll probably have
bring him in and we'll just have a fantasy baseball special.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. And we'll
we
get
talk
Luke
about Ricky Weeks.
But we don't want to discuss too much, because then we'll know who the other guy's going to pick. And then, you know,
so do we do it after our draft?
After the draft.
Okay, after the draft.
Yeah. And Ricky Weeks will be mine this
we'll have
year.
To talk about
speaking of fantasy baseball, where's my, what do I got coming to me? 50 for third place? Or what was that?
Yes.
Don't look at me.
No, I don't care.
You gotta talk to Evan.
All right. You get the bronze
Evan's
medal.
Evan's the money man.
Yeah. You get the bronze medal. All right, listen, for Jesse, Andy Stevens, I'm Owen Main. It's been fun with you today. We'll catch you next time on fansmanship.com podcast. Catch us on iTunes or on fansmanship.com. And you just got Cedric Sabalos.
Peace.
Or Twitter, hashtag debacle.
And thank you all for listening to the fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.